Hello and welcome back, everybody, to the show that never ends. I am your host, Will, and this is the Everyman Drummer Podcast. Check it out on the YouTubes. Check it out on the social medias. Your handles are at The Real Will Geronimo. DM me there for show ideas, all of the above. This show is about you, for you, for the every drummer. Today, no, we took a week off. Get back into the swing of things. Let's move it on. Your email address, theeverymandrummerpodcast@yahoo.com. Email me there. Hit me up in the comments. Anything we talk about, will be links in the show tunes or in the show notes. If we're talking about anything in YouTube land or on Instagram and the Twitter, check it out. Anyway, let's talk about what we've been doing the past week. So we took a week off. I was watching a YouTube channel by the name of Sounds Like a Drum. We'll put that link in the show notes again. I've been promoting this guy a lot. This is Cody Rand. And he talked about modifying and supercharging your bass drum pedal. And so I went ahead and I did it. So this is coming from real world experience now. Now we're going to bring it down to that real world experience with actually what happened. So I have an old PDP bass drum pedal. You guys probably have seen it. Some of you probably use it. It's a fairly decent pedal. I wouldn't say it's the best one out there. Plenty of other ones out there for the money. But, you know, but for $50 or $70, I don't know. They may have upped it a little bit. I haven't checked the Sweetwater.com listings on there. I know you can find them secondhand on, like, eBay for, like, $40 and below. Anyway, it's a decent starter pedal. It's got the chain on there for the sprocket. It's got single spring and a side adjusting anchor for the bass drum hoop. So similar to the DW1s. Similar, but without all the fancy stuff. So I'm privileged enough to have, I'm lucky enough to own the DW5000 double pedal. It's simply the greatest pedal on the market. I played it for almost 100 years now. It's just the best pedal out there. That's my opinion. Take it as it will. I mean, you guys all have other pedals. I played other pedals too. Some of those Axis ones are pretty cool. It's got that aluminum drive system on there, or single brushed pedal on there. A lot of the metal hardcore guys use those things. Those things are incredibly fast. Like, just stupid fast. And I don't play my double bass drum licks or my double bass drum, you know, at the speed of sound. I don't, that's not me. I'm not a double bass player. But they got plenty of other pedals out there. I'm just talking about the one that I own, the couple ones that I own. So, looking at the PDP pedal, it's like, I'm going to take a look and see if we can find it on eBay or something like that. Because I honestly forgot what number. DW's got the 5,000, the 3,000, the 4,000. I think they had a 7,000 at the time. 8,000s they have now, but I believe those are just hardware. I have the 5,000 accelerator pedal. And I've had that since 96. It's 2021 now. That's just to show you the test of time. It still costs as much as it did back then, roughly $250-$300 is what it cost back then, and it still costs the same amount now, just to tell you the quality of it. You know, John Good and Don Lombardi did some really good stuff. So here we are, we're looking at the on eBay. You can find one. I'm getting really tempted to buy one. Another one, just as a backup, because once you do this modification, it's a really good modification to put on that pedal. Pedal's a lot smoother, and to be completely honest, it feels just as fast as my 5000 pedal. So here's one on eBay, BDP kick drum pedal. Check, look at this, used. It's got 4 days left. Starting bid is $24.95. This is where they kill you right here. The expedited shipping at $21.90. So you're basically paying about $50-$60 for a pedal. So this is exactly the one that I have on my jazz kit here. Same thing. The chain. The single spring on there. The side adjustment to lock the anchor down to the hoop. There's no hinge. There's really not a hinge on the pedal, on the heel plate of the footboard. But yeah, you could find this pedal. And I'm sure this modification works. Whatever pedal brand that you're using. So, but even some of the other brands out there that are the lower ones, the lower brands of the big boys, some of those pedals are really good too. They may not have all the expensive fancy stuff on there, but you know, when it comes down to the pedals and why some of them are cheaper than the other ones, it's basically because of the fact that they're using some cost cutting techniques on there just so that it gets there. So it may not have the sprocket, it may not have that rocker on the side. So anyway, back to that modification. He talked about changing the rocker on the side where the spring hooks up to the rocker and it sways back and forth. And he bought one from DW. And he modified, I believe it was a Yamaha pedal on there. And it's just, I did the comparison test with the before and after. I posted some pictures of it up on my Instagram page. I don't know if anybody saw that, but that's modifications up on my Instagram page. There's pictures, close-up pictures of the modification that was done. So he did it, and the reflex, and it's got that play on there. And he even said that pedal has now become one of his favorite pedals. And for an easy modification like that, it's the one that's used a lot on his gigs. And so I said, sure, let's give it a shot. So I went on the DW website, called up my rep over there, or emailed him with my order for the rocker on there. $5, $5.99 I paid. Shipping total was like $7, $7-$8 came in a couple days later. So I had some free time over the weekend, completely dismantled the pedal right at the rocker where the spring hooks up. Did the before test on the reflex on this pedal, and it being, you know, cost cutting pedal on there, it was, the reflex on it was not as good as you want it to be. Everybody knows what I'm talking about. The kickback, you let go of the pedal board and the spring, the pedal actually goes back like a pendulum. So everybody knows on these lower ones, they don't sway for very long. It comes back, it goes forward, it comes back, and it pretty much stops. So I went ahead and I did the modification on there. Slapped on. You got to be careful. Sometimes you have to modify the modification to get it to work. And what I mean by that is I had to use some of the old pieces from the original. I had to use the old screw. I still have, when DW ships out the new rocker upgrades, it comes with the key, like your typical drum key screw on there. It has a washer and a square threaded plate on the end. And then you've got the little bearing. And so I had to use some of the old hardware along with the new hardware on this thing to just make it fit. I mean, it works. It's just the screw was a little bit too big. So I can't use the drum key like I can on my DW pedal, which is fine. That's fine. You don't expect these things to break. You keep a screwdriver. My survival kit has a screwdriver in it just in case something goes wrong on a show. So I modified it. It took all but, you know, like a couple minutes. Got the pedal back together. And let me tell you this, the tension on the spring is just as good as the tension on my 5000 pedal. The pedals feel incredible. So you went from owning a $20 pedal to owning a $90 pedal with a simple $5 modification on there. check it out on dwdrums.com. They have their accessory thing there. You can modify your pedals and whatnot. That's where I bought the rocker, the bearing for the rocker. I'll put that link up in the show notes so you guys can check it out. But yeah, so I took that. The feel, incredible. And I was able to, I compared it with my 5000 pedal. I jumped back and forth between the kits, and the play and the feel is almost identical. When I say almost, it's nearly there. And on this other kit, we're using a $20 pedal versus a between $530 and $300 pedal. And you're just like, man. So now I become hooked. Now it's like I want to buy other cheaper pedals and make the modification myself for half of the price, for a fraction of the cost, and you're going to have that already. So that's something I recommend you guys check that out. Do it. Check it out. Have fun with it. Modify those pedals. Modify anything, since we're all about modifying. That's one thing that I did on this break here. You don't usually talk about what goes on the break unless it's, you know, it's music related. So the other thing was, I started being a freelance musician. Always brings up an opportunity to record. Whether you do it at home or you're actually commuting down to the studio. Here in Chicago, we've got plenty of them. I've had the luxury of just doing it here at the house in my drum room here. I've got the recording get-go get-ups. It's all set up and all that fun. So I have that luxury of doing it here. That's why it takes 3 times as long for me to get stuff recorded, because it's in the comfort of your own home, and it's like, oh, I got to go up there and do that. Well, that's part of the fun. You can record whenever you want, except for when everybody's asleep. So, anyway, so I got called in to do some session work for another local artist here in the Chicago area. And that's the joy that I get to have, as being a freelancer and a session drummer here. I get to work with all types of artists, all different types of musical genres. The point being, it's like you don't have to be rooted to just one style. Oftentimes, I get this question asked. Would I rather be a session guy or be in a band? And the answer to that question, to those questions, or whatever, is yes. And people often, well, what do you mean yes? What do I mean yes? Well, it's simple. Yes. Well, what the hell does that mean? Well, yes, I want to be a session guy, and yes, I'd like to be in a band. And people look at you all stupid-eyed. And be like, well, what is that? What does that mean? Well, think about it. You want to be a session guy, but you also want to be in a band. So being a session guy, you have the freedom to pick and choose what band you want to be in, right? So, yes, I want to be a session guy, and I want to be in a band. You know, right now, it's like I've said before on this show a couple times already. I'm semi-retired from the road, but I'm never retired from the studio. I had a talk with my friend and colleague, sort of like my pseudo-manager as well. He's the one that's been pushing and getting me all this other work. You know, it's now with this pandemic, you know, nearing the end, but they're saying there's something else floating around now, so we don't know if it really is near the end. I have stuff lined up already. And we were talking about this. This was maybe in January. I know it was as cold as shit out, and we were talking about it. Maybe it was cold and then it got warm. I don't know. But my friend and colleague, we were talking about this over at the studio in Chicago. We were at Fort Knox, and we were talking about this. And we were saying to another artist who shall remain unnamed, we were made a comment to the both of us. This was years ago now, and it's a comment that lingers in the back of my head. It's a comment that lingers in the back of his head as well. We both feel the same way. We both were, you know, we were kind of duped, but we were kind of it was more like we were backstabbed. And What I mean is, the comment that was made was, we basically screwed ourselves because we're no longer playing in this group. And me and my buddy, me and my colleague, my closest friends in the music business, talked about that. And we were like, really, we really screwed ourselves because now we're doing this. We're doing that. He's got his own show. I've got my own show. I've played in, since, you know, leaving said group, I've played for hip-hop artists, I've played for alternative rock artists, I've recorded for this artist, I've recorded for that artist. You can hear me on so-and-so's album, on that person's album, on that loop over there. Yet I screwed myself because I'm no longer playing with said artist. Now, how the hell does that work? I don't know. I'm not sure how that works. What that tells me is that it's more like said artist is more afraid of your success than they are of their own. So they're going to try to bash you down because they're done. They're playing the same circuit over and over and over again, while the rest of us are moving on to other bigger and better things. And that's why I say there's exceptions to the rule. I say I'm semi-retired from the road, but there's always exceptions. I'm never retired from the studio. I'd rather have my catalog be 20, 30 pages in 5 different books rather than 20, 30 pages in half of a book. I'd be all over the place. I look at my heroes. The big five, with the exception of one. They've all played in different bands. Especially my number five on the list. And everybody who knows me knows who my number five is. Yes, he had a home band. He sure as hell did. Up until his death. But you play any pop record and you're going to hear them. Now, I'd rather my catalog be like that than your catalog is just me, 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 me. And that's it. That's when you ask. That's when I start to ask. And I say this to other musicians as well. And it sounds asshole-ish, but you know what? It's just the nature of the beast. People come up, oh, I only play this, I only play that. And then my question is, so what? So you only play this, that, and that? Or you only play this genre, or you only play that genre? Are you really good? Well, don't get me wrong. There's some guys that are phenomenal. There's exceptions to that. But for the vast majority, if you're only playing one genre, it's like Mike Mangini said, don't be prejudice against other music. Just because you don't have to like it to play it. And that stuck with me when Mangini said that. Music is supposed to be the universal language. So everybody knows that my background in music is jazz. So when people ask me, I look at the musical. Music is a language that everybody, it's a universal language. So I people will ask me, what do I play? I'm well versed in everything. But my primary language is jazz in the dialect of fusion. But I understand all languages, so it's, if you look at it that way, that's why freelancing and being able to do this for whomever in any style, to be able to be thrown into any style, your value's gonna go up versus I only play this or I only play that. Oh, I can't do that. Give it a shot. It always goes back to that video that I watched one night of 666 Samus. Death metal drummer, incredible chops. He does one of the most bravest things ever, and he ventures into the language of jazz. And he's never played jazz ever in his life. And he didn't do a damn bad job at it. So I applaud him on it. That's what it comes down to. You got to be well versed. And being a freelancer, I'd rather be a freelancer than being stuck in one band. Now, if I could be in one band and still be doing freelancing, then you got it made, man. You've just struck gold. You struck oil. So take that for what it's worth. I'm not going to tell you which one's better. I'm not going to tell you this and that and the other. It really comes up to your personal preferences on what you want to be doing with your musical talents, with your career. And personally, me, as an artist, I look at myself, I am an artist. I'm not just a drummer. I'm an artist because I do work with different artists. Been here, been there. Worked on this one, threw this one, did a little bit of my own. But being able to be universal, it's important, and it plays a big role in the music industry. I'm just telling you that from experience. Your phone is, and I've said this many times on this program, the more languages you can cover, the busier you're going to be. The busier you are going to be. And if you have the luxury to do that at home and be able to work with people from across the country, more power to you. Get it done, man. Get it done. Get it done. We're all tired of working for people. I know I am. I know I am. I've got other ventures out there that I've, you know, fallen down a rabbit hole. Some of you who personally know me on this side of the show, you guys know what I'm talking about over there. So being a freelancer and being able to record music, that's one of the best things you want to be able to do as a freelance musician. And it's not just under one genre, it's for everything. But that's why I took that week off. I was busy. I started tracking for a new album that should be coming out possibly within the year, possibly in next year. Stay tuned for that. Stay glued to my Twitter handles if you already are, and I've been talking about my other ventures on there. It's because it's an exciting time right now for everybody. It's very exciting, I'd say. So I go to my day job, and I fucking hate it. Bottom line. I'm tired of working for people. And the only time I like working for people is when, hey, man, you mind cutting a track for me? Sure, why not? Why not? Then and there, I don't have a problem working for people. Part of that's my job. And I'm doing what I love. And it's beating things with sticks. So, anyway. That's what's been happening the past week. So we're looking at recording this album out. And finally, it's 7 years in the making. It's looking really good. I've got a couple bass players that I got right now. It's focused with one bass player who's just a phenomenal guy, phenomenal talent. Not only is a phenomenal bass player, just a phenomenal person on the end. Just a great talent, just a great guy to be around. One of the nicest guys you'll meet out there. And he's doing a couple of the tracks right now. So far, of the two tracks that I've recorded, he's going to probably be on it because his style gels with the music that's going on. And the next track that I'm going to record, I'm probably going to use him again simply because of the fact that his style just fits with it. His style, there's so much. You got to use your weapons accordingly. You just can't throw... I mean, I guess you could. You can't throw like Geddy Lee to play in a contemporary band. You pick and choose. You could probably use Geddy Lee and get away with it for, I'd say, like a pop, you know, popular stuff. Obviously, you're going prog. You're going to call like Geddy Lee or, you know, guys of that caliber. I would put myself up with the guy that I'm using right now. His name's Dennis Kozlowski. A fantastic bass player in his own right. Very well versed in jazz and in jazz fusion. So I always like to make the analogy comparison. So he's like a Jaco Pastorius mixed in with a Marcus Miller. So I give you a style of the caliber bass player. I have my other bass players too, and as a personal friend of mine, I've known him since forever, and he's another go-to guy. His name is Tom Perkins, and he's more progressive rock blues. And if you guys take a look at my Instagram page, see if I could find that. I forgot. I had made up a thing about I made up this thing about the top five bass players, most influential bass players. This is just a list that I made up strictly for myself, and it turned into people agreeing to disagree and people applauding it. And you know, I made that comment again. I played with some fabulous bass players, incredible talents through my career, and I did this one called, these are the top five bass players that have influenced me, who I think, you know, some of my favorite bass players, you know. And I had John Paul Jones, Geddy Lee, Jaco Pastorius. Was Tony Levin on it? I don't know if Tony was on it or not. You know, I'm going to have to take a look at that because I've completely forgot who's on that thing. It was done a while. I think it was done last year. Well, we'll take a look at it. We'll bring it up. But anyway, it's like I had this list of the five of my five favorite bass players. And I had mentioned Tom's name, and he made a comment. He had a comment on there, and he said, "To be mentioned next to John Paul Jones is an honor." Now, John Paul Jones, the bass player for Zeppelin, which we'll get into in a minute, that's another bass player well-versed in everything. As he's going to be probably one of those bass players that if you could borrow him, if you could borrow John Paul Jones, you'd probably throw him on everything that you're recording on. And the reason why I say that is because he is so versatile. I think if memory serves me right, I believe JPJ was a studio guy before he got into Zeppelin. And not only is JPJ well-versed with the bass guitar, but people tend to forget his synthesizer skills too. So I'm scrolling through here looking for that top five bass players that I have. And like I said, it's incredible. It's like I've said, I've been honored, and here we go, right here. So, in my opinion, you can look back at this. This is, I posted this back on August 11th of 2020. My top five bass players, and I even said it here. Now throughout my career, I've played with some really great bass players. Steve Hart, Bruce Smith, Tom Perkins, and Dennis Kozlowski. Those are some of my favorite guys I've ever played with. Steve Hart, here in Chicago, duh. Phenomenal. You compare him to, you can make the comp on him and the argument, who's better, him or Stanley Clark? I don't know. It's pretty damn close, man. But Steve is busy. He's one of those bass players that's just, he'll sit in with any setting. He's great. Bruce Smith, I worked with him when I was in the band Ignescent, and he's out doing other things as well. That's just the talent right there. You can make the argument that's a straight up rock player right there. Straight up rock player, understands everything. That's a prog rock guy. He's progressive metal. Make the comparison of a Cliff Burton. Tom, we already know about, and Dennis, we already know about. Those are the two guys that I usually use frequently. So on my top five list, I got Cliff Burton, John Paul Jones, Jimmy Haslip, Jaco Pastorius, and Geddy Lee. Those are my top five greatest bass players of all time. And I listed the four that I know personally. They're great in their own right. They made the comment to be compared to those guys, and they took that as an honor. Took it as an honor. Being able to be versed in all that stuff, you'd want to use your weapons accordingly. You want to use your... Be nice to be used. And even me, I go the same way. If I'm well-versed, but sometimes I don't fit what they're trying to do, I will recommend them to go... I'll recommend other drummer colleagues of mine. I'll pass the gig on to somebody else. He'll probably do a better job than I will. And a lot of you that know me will go, what? Yeah, it's true. Sometimes there's certain things that I can't do everything. I just can't. You know, sometimes my style won't gel with it. And I've had that done before. I've recorded on an album. This was years ago. Well, I recorded the entire album. Tracks 1 through 12, I recorded the whole thing. When the album was finally done, I was only on one track. It didn't matter for me. I got paid for all of that. But to be used only on one, and I get it. It's part of the business. You go back and you listen to it, and yeah, something doesn't have that feel that you're looking for. So that's why you oftentimes see different musicians used for different things. The one constant on this album is me so far. I don't know. Maybe I'm not going to be the constant on there. But just to get it started, again, I've worked with this artist for 7 years. I personally know her. We've known each other. We went to school together. We went to college together. So there's that writing chemistry we've already known. And the style, she just likes the way the style gels with her music and kind of glues it all together. So then it's my job to find out they're the supporting cast of characters. So that's where I bring in my arsenal of my two favorite bass players, and I trade between who wants to do which one, and it's like, I think you'll be good here. I'll probably record other ones and then compare the two, which one has more of a feel, which one, you know. You got to utilize the tools that you have. So being a freelancer, that's where that comes in. That's how we got onto this. Freelancing and having your catalog will speak for more of your skill than your catalog will. Because it's all over the place, and it will get you noticed even more. All right, final segment of the show is the What's in My CD Player. And on terms of JPJ, John Paul Jones, the What's in My CD Player was Led Zeppelin IV. One of the iconic albums of the past 30, 40 years could be even listed as one of the greatest albums of all time. Zeppelin IV. The way I listened to it on the headphones, I listened to it in the car. It's just sonically recorded. It makes sense. It's one of those albums that when you listen to Zeppelin IV and you're out recording your stuff, that's like a pinnacle. Now, a lot of people will say A Night at the Opera is what you want it to sound like, Queen's Night at the Opera. And you know what? There's a fucking great argument for that. You mean you got to bust your ass to get it sounding like that. But there's an argument for that, and we'll save that for another day. But right now, it's like a lot of people stride for sonically and just production value. Zeppelin IV is one of the best, one of the greatest albums of all time. Hits after hits. It starts off with Black Dog. And it ends with When the Levee Breaks. Techniques that were used to record were just cutting edge when that album was cut. And you look at it, and you try to replicate it using all the shit that we have today, the plugins, and you can't. Then you find out what they actually did, and you're just like, what? Like, who would have thought that and I never knew this until recently, that When the Levee Breaks, John's drums were recorded in the middle of a stairwell while microphones were hung above. No processing. That's natural reverb. Goes out, and that's... again, why he's one of the greatest drummers of all time. He's in that list. But just some of the stuff that was being, how it was being recorded with Led Zeppelin 4, it's just incredible. Not forget that Stairway to Heaven is on that one. You know, it ends side one. I believe it ends side one. And then side two starts off with, is, correct me if I'm wrong, I want to say it's Four Sticks. And Four Sticks is one of my favorite tracks on there. It's either Four Sticks or Misty Mountain Hop starts off side two. Not sure. But Four Sticks is one of my favorite tracks on there. The Battle of Evermore is another good one, too. But if I had to pick one off of that album, it's Four Sticks. That's the one that's, I just, the way it sounds, the melodies in there, the time signature, it's all over. I think it was recorded in 6/8. And John's technique, he's actually using four sticks, hence the name of the song, Four Sticks. He used four drumsticks to record that. I actually saw a little video of him actually playing. It was actually pretty cool. He's writing on the rack tom and the floor toms, and it, with the bass, the bits four on the, I think it's four on the bass drum. I'm trying to play it out. Yeah, playing it out. He's got the bass drum's got, it's hitting the eighth notes of the 1 2 3 4 5 6 7 8, and then starts all over again with the six and goes back and forth. It's trading. It's weird. I have to go and listen to it again. But off of that album, Zeppelin 4, that's my favorite track. That's the track that I always started off with. Plus, you got John Paul Jones is playing synthesizers on there as well. Just a great song. Yeah, everybody, the lyrics have nothing to do with Four Sticks. When you've got just the what Robert's singing about there. But Zeppelin 4 is what's in my CD player as of recently. I've been on a kind of a Zeppelin binge recently as well. They just released a lot of their catalog with special deluxe album, deluxe editions, which I'm music collecting is another thing that I do. So yeah, why not go back and buy a lot of that stuff if you can? So, and the outtakes that I've streamed and listened to, just phenomenal. But that's what's in my CD player. Zeppelin 4, perhaps one of the greatest albums of all time, just sonically and how it was utilized. Want to thank the people at Anchor.fm for helping us put together this show. If you guys are into podcasting, you guys got a lot to say about a certain topic, check out Anchor.fm. They'll help you get your podcast out. They'll do some of the legwork for you by getting it out on Spotify. Spotify. But you know what? They broadcast this, so I really can't be mad. I understand it rips off a lot of the artists, but, you know, I use it to discover artists, and I still go back and I buy the albums because it's the right thing to do. But this podcast is brought out on Pocket Cast. I think it's on Google Podcast. It's on Stitcher, I believe. It's on Apple Podcasts. Pretty much anywhere you could get your podcast. But that's all brought to you by the wonderful people over at Anchor.fm. They really help you get your show out. You know, you put in ads, they match you up with ads, they sponsor, whatever. But check it out. You got a topic, they'll make it really easy for you to get started on your own show, just like I have, a year in running now. That's all we got for today. Until next time, everybody keep drumming and stay safe. We will catch you on the next episode. Have a wonderful, wonderful day playing drums. And let's go out there and meet up sometime, and let's talk music if you're in the local Chicago area once everything starts opening up more. Until next time, have a wonderful time recording, and stay listening, keep practicing. Let's go out there and drum.